Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I am here with my co-host, Alfred Addis, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Tuesday, November 3rd, 2015. Good afternoon, Al.
Hi, Melody.
Gold had a tough day today. Looking at it now, it's down 16.30 in the aftermarket New York spot price at 11.18. Silver down 14 at 15.37. Had a little bit better recovery than gold did. Not by much, but a little bit. Platinum down $14 at 967. And palladium was down 3 at 649. Remember yesterday, palladium got beaten up. Down over 4% on the day. So you have the USDX today, much stronger today, 0.26 at 97.17. And crude oil was up strong, 1.79 at 47.93. Paper markets today, they're just going to go. I saw an article today. It wasn't an article. It was an advertisement for the Dow Jones at 31,000. That might be possible, in the next year with what's going on coming from the White House and so forth. But let's see if it gets 25,000 first. The Dow was up 89 at 17,918. The NASDAQ was up 17 at 51.45. And the S&P was up 5 at 21.09. 10-year yield, 2.22%. Up 0.03, and the euro is down 0.44, but still at that 110 level. European markets, really no changes. Japan was down 2%, 391 points, but, Japan is Japan. How much more stimulus is he going to do? And, it fails to accomplish much.
You've got a little article on that same subject from Financial Times that we'll get into before the program's done. I don't know if you want to do it right now or not.
Yeah, may as well.
Here it is from Financial Times. The headline is, Bank of Japan Considers More Easing. It says, while the U.S. Federal Reserve contemplates a finely balanced decision about whether to raise interest rates in December, or 2018, they didn't actually say 2018, I did, but its Japanese counterpart, the Central Bank of Japan, is being forced the other way. Last Friday, the Bank of Japan decided to leave monetary policy unchanged, but it also revised down its inflation and growth forecasts. and pushed back its expectation of hitting the 2% inflation target to the end of next year. In other words, they're a little over 13 months from now. Apparently, they thought they were going to get to it around now, and they said, no, maybe it'll be next year. It seems likely and indeed desirable that the Bank of Japan will be forced to expand its program of quantitative easing before long. Now, these are the words of Financial Times. It seems likely and desirable that the Bank of Japan will be forced to expand its program of quantitative easing, which essentially means they're going to push more money into the economy and try to inflate prices and thereby stimulate the economy. The Bank of Japan goes, the Financial Times goes on and says, disappointing outcomes do not mean that the Bank of Japan's combination of inflation target and using quantitative easing has failed, but that the needs that it needs to be more enthusiastically pursued. See, just because it hasn't succeeded up till now doesn't mean it's not going to work. We just have to more and pursue it with greater enthusiasm. And that doesn't mean you have to get a horn and a party hat and rest that sort of thing and maybe ride a faster horse. What they mean more enthusiastically pursued, it means you need to pump more fiat currency into the economy, all right, and try to make more inflation. It's a question of magnitude. Financial Times continues, the Bank of Japan can and should contemplate going further. And my point is, even though quantitative easing has failed to stimulate the Japanese economy for most of 20 years, even though quantitative easing has failed to stimulate the U.S. economy for the past 6 years, beyond perhaps preventing a crash, but we didn't get much positive benefit out of it, and even though quantitative easing appears to be currently failing to stimulate the European Union and Chinese economies, that's no reason to believe that quantitative easing doesn't work, is it? After all, it's conventional wisdom that if at first you don't succeed, try again. Of course, it's also conventional wisdom to say doing the same thing over and over and hoping to get a different result is the definition of insanity. So, Elodie, which of these conventional wisdoms do you think is most applicable to Japan's current situation? Try again? Or the definition of insanity. What are they doing here, Melody?
Both.
Yeah, maybe.
It's not a matter of try again. I mean,
they have no options.
So, yeah, I mean, they have no options but to keep doing what they're doing.
This is where the real point goes. This is the point to it. The article continues. When you say they have no options, there's even
greater...
Well,
they do have an option, but they won't take that one.
Like what?
Well, you continue with your article.
For one, the practice of extending target dates and for hitting the goal of 2% inflation does not reassure investors, households, and companies that the bank is doing whatever it takes. In other words, every time the bank can't say, okay, we're going to have 2% inflation by the end of 2015. And then when we don't get it, they say, okay, we're going to have 2% inflation by the end of 2016. And if they don't get that, okay, we're going to have 12% inflation by the end of 2018. And the article says extending these target dates for hitting the goal of 2% inflation does not reassure investors, households, or companies that the bank is doing whatever it takes. And my comment is that no. Extending target dates does not diminish public confidence in believing that the bank is doing all that it can do. It diminishes public confidence that quantitative easing works and therefore diminishes public confidence that the central bank has any tools at all that even could work to repair the economy. Extending target dates is not an admission that the central bank hasn't done enough. It's an admission that the central bank is helpless to solve the problem and therefore is not in control of the economy. And that diminishes public confidence in the system. There's the problem. They're saying, oh, just setting these back. You need to just do more quantitative easing. That's the solution. And the lesson is that quantitative easing doesn't really work. And if it doesn't work, what does? And that's a very big question. what works to stimulate, to put the economy back on track. And we'll touch on that before we get done here. Haruhiko Kuroda, the Bank of Japan's governor, has a point that inflation rates have been pushed down by lower oil prices. But the weakness of real consumption, which fell by 0.4% in September, a year earlier, suggests there remains serious problems generating domestically driven demand and inflation. But what are those problems? We can all sit back here and kind of say, yeah, there's some kind of economic problem going on here, but what is it? All right? One measure might be that might provide an immediate boost to growth would be to permit higher immigration, relieving Japan's chronic labor shortage. Foreigners make up 0.3% of Japanese labor force and lower among the lowest among advanced economies. Mr. Abe has so far shied away from this politically explosive area, and that's, of course, because the Japanese, they aren't going to take anybody else in their country. They are ethnocentric to an extraordinary degree, and they are shutting down schools. They're not producing enough children. So what are they going to do? Invite others in, other races to enter their country? No. They're shutting down schools because they don't have enough kids to fill them. It's evidence of a nation that is prepared to die rather than, at least for the moment, they're prepared to die rather than allow foreigners to enter into their country. Now, the Financial Times article says, nevertheless, it cannot be up to Mr. Kuroda and his colleagues to get Japan's sputtering economy up to cruising speed. All right, he means that the Financial Times are admitted, they are implicitly admitting the obvious. The Central Bank of Japan and its quantitative easing programs have been proven to be incapable of reviving Japan's stagnant economy. If quantitative easing won't work, if quantitative easing can't work, what will? Should an economic depression be viewed as the result of economic imbalances and distortions? Is that why we have depressions? We're talking about we have serious problems, but what are they? And how are they going to be resolved? And are the problems making a depression more likely? Or is it possible that the depression should be, in other words, should an economic depression be viewed as the result of economic imbalances and distortions? Or is it possible, it seems like a crazy idea, but is it possible that an economic depression should be viewed as the cure for economic imbalances and depressions? Yeah. Is an economic depression really a disease to be avoided or a remedy that flushes, it's like a giant national enema that flushes the crapola out of our political and economic system? Do we have so many imbalances and so many stupid things done by Washington and by ourselves that the only way to revive, to bring us back to some sort of sanity, we need an economic depression? Is that possible? I won't argue that it's true, but it certainly seems like it might be possible. Could it be an economic depression is the only viable cure for economic imbalances created by our government and monetary systems? If quantitative easing won't work, if quantitative easing can't work, is the only remedy for the distortions we see in this economy right now, is the only remedy an economic depression? Not a disease, not an adverse consequence, but a remedy, kind of like taking a big dose of castor oil. What do you think, Melody? Is there a silver lining to an economic depression?
Well, I think these countries are trying to run their economies as they once were. And when we have globalization to the degree that we have with all these trade agreements, and what worked yesterday is not working today.
Yeah, I know.
And you do have to reset these countries and these economies and these monetary policies. And you do have to get out of throwing the stimulus, throwing money down a rat hole. It's not going to change anything. So, you know, these countries do have to be reset. And, I mean, you know what? I was reading today about Switzerland, and they have deflation in their country, but they have something that they choose to call good deflation. And it's working for them. Certainly, they still have their problems, but they recognize that their country isn't going to be what it was, you know, 10 years ago or 15 or 20 years ago. Their position not to, their GDP has dropped, and they've accepted this. And so it's interesting to see how deflation for them is good.
Deflation is good for some people.
And it has worked.
It's good for creditors.
I mean, they have...
terrible for borrowers. It's great for creditors. You get paid back. If you do get paid back, you get paid back with dollars that have more purchasing power than the dollars you loaned. But it's terrible for debtors because they have to pay back with more expensive currency. Everybody's bought a house, has been virtually everyone has heard someone tell them that you'll be able to pay off your debt with cheaper dollars because they expect an inflation. That's great for debtors, borrowers, but it's terrible for creditors. So this is one of those teeter-totter things where what's good for the goose is not good for the gander. Uh-huh. And the question is, how long can we keep doing what's good for the goose without doing something good for the gander? And that's what we've been doing. We've been saying, oh, we're going to have inflation, and keep robbing creditors. Well, now we're getting a little deflation. Creditors are perhaps beginning to catch up on the losses they've experienced in the past, but, you know.
So I'm not so sure that this deflation that they call good for Switzerland is a long-term solution to, you know, their problems. I mean, they were one of the first who were offering negative rates. Their dollar since they pulled away from the euro, their franc has become very strong. And so
how do we get into inflation and deflation in the first place? You know, one of the things I read an article back some time ago, I don't recall when, a year ago, maybe more, I don't remember. But they pointed out that the price of most items in, I don't know, the late 1800s, perhaps even early 1900s, were virtually the same as the prices were back when this country started in the late 1700s. We'd had flat prices for just about everything. They were steady for a century. Now, I'm sure there were exceptions, but nevertheless, according to the article, prices were basically flat. Why? Because we had prices denominated in gold or silver coin. Mm-hmm. Our inflation and deflation problems are a function of a fiat currency that has no fixed value. And somebody's always messing with it one way or another. Huh? And I would say that all of you got a problem with inflation, you can talk to the guy who gave us fiat currency and a debt-based monetary system. Got a problem with deflation? Same people. They're the ones that have done it. It's that debt-based monetary system. It's that fiat monetary system. That's what lays the foundation for both inflation and deflation and gives the politicians a certain amount of control. Gives the Federal Reserve a certain amount of control. They can give us inflation for a while and rob the creditors, or they can give us deflation for a while and rob the borrowers. But somebody's going to get robbed. And that's one of the fundamental realities of that fiat currency, debt-based monetary system. Somebody's going to get robbed. When you had gold, that was not true. They weren't being robbed by the government in the sense that we're talking about right now. Let's take a break for some commercials. Melody and I are here on Financial Survival, and we'll be right back. Please stay tuned.
Make the aspirin mistake. Aspirin was discovered by mistake during World War II and suppresses your immune system and prevents blood clotting. Don't expose your body to risk when you can use a natural inflammation and pain reliever called Extra Strength Pain Relief by Apothecary Herbs. Discover the power this formula has with Salicin to enter the system in 60 seconds to work hard and relieve pain for 12 hours. Whether it's arthritis, sports injury, or flu, you can relieve aches, pain, and swelling with our extra strength pain relief formula. Call Apothecary Herbs now, toll free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188. What's next, Melody?
I want to continue through with our special $25 face value of 90% quarter, so you would receive 100 coins, an AU $5 Liberty gold piece, free shipping. It's all included in the price, and we got to get you guys going out there buying these specials. We're going to include a free Silver Eagle at the same price as yesterday. So a free Silver Eagle, 90% quarters, $25 face value, which equals 100 of them, and an AU $5 Liberty gold piece, all for the low price of $700. Give us a call, 1-800-375-4188. Visit the website, DGScoins.com, DGScoins.com, and make sure you sign up for our weekly newsletter and listen to the radio programs that are archived there on a daily and weekly format. Thank you. We have James. We have Jim from West Virginia calling. Good afternoon, Jim.
How are you fellas doing?
Can't complain.
Oh, this is excellent. Well, the way I hear it, some politicians are saying, oh, in order to fix the economy, you, the people, will have to bleed in a recession.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Now, and once again, the elephant's being ignored. We were once a nation of producers of wealth.
Mm-hmm.
We took things of little or no value, increased server value as a result of human endeavor. But now we have become a nation of sellers and scammers and predator parasites. And the biggest parasite predators are found on Wall Street, the Washington, D.C. area, a number of state capitals, and the Federal Reserve System. Now, I'm going to tell you folks out there that if we don't have enough of what we want and need, okay, I've used the phrase, I'll hit it again, food, fuel, fiber for clothes, materials and tools to build things, finished goods and services, things people are willing to buy, If you're not producing any wealth anybody's willing to buy, you are feeding off of the other people. You are consuming what others have produced. And the producers are getting bled down so far that it's when the producers fall down, all fall down with them. Now listen, if you're working for the government and you're not producing wealth, you are consuming it. And the only way to reverse all this is to reverse this process, put people back in the private sector where they produce real wealth. Right now, what we have is a situation where the government is cramming security down our throat, and by golly, we're taking two-thirds of the money in the economy to produce this security for you. Now, is that ever going to happen before we have big crunches? I doubt it seriously, but you need to know, folks, if you're working for the government and the Federal Reserve note starts failing, you ain't got nothing to offer the world to barter. You're going to be in the worst position. All you paper, filthy rich paper people, when the paper goes, guess what? You lose. So I'm just trying to wake people up to the elephant in the room. I can remember way back in the 60s to 70s, and one of these days I'll do a diatribe about the corporation issue. But way back then, the question was raised, I think it was some newspaper article, probably Wall Street Journal or something, and we're talking about the fact that so many governments were corporations. Oh, we did that so it'd be easier to do business. So the bottom line is that we have all these corporations. We see the United States of America is a corporation, then they don't have to show us a trade agreement that they have made with the rest of the world, because it's a private corporate agreement. So we have two huge elephants in the room, the biggest one being too much government, and the other one is the fact that this government, so these are all corporations. So the FBI have a license to do business in your state? I don't think so. It's a corporation. Does it pay corporate income tax? I don't think so. Does the DEA pay corporate income tax? I don't think so. Is there any oversight of them? No, I don't think so. And if you think your auditor is going to do oversight, hey, the auditor knows where the bodies are buried. The auditor knows where the gold is, and nobody dares mess with the auditor, and the auditor better not step out of line. So, folks, just understand that all this gibberish coming out of the financial sector about what must be done, they're ignoring the elephant in the room. And it will come apart sooner or later. God bless you all.
All right, thank you, Jim. I actually think there is another elephant that is perhaps more significant, and the elephant is a debt-based monetary system. What that inevitably means, if we have a debt-based monetary system, we used to have an asset-based monetary system. It was backed by gold or silver. And what that meant is if the government issued a paper dollar, for example, or the Federal Reserve note did, they had to back whatever that piece of paper was, whether it was a dollar or a bond, it had to be backed with gold and silver. You could take it to the government, you could take it to the Federal Reserve, whoever issued it, and say, ha-ha, I have a piece of paper here with Secretary of the Treasury's signature on it for $100,000, and I want it in gold. They said, okay, no problem. But they changed over to a debt-based monetary system. And a debt-based monetary system, a debt is just a promise to pay. We have come to a point where we value the promises to pay. We value the debts. Because we have a debt-based monetary system, we have been taught to value debts more so, or at least the banks have and the government has. The debts are more important than the assets. Part of the reason for this is you can use these debt instruments like U.S. bonds, a mere promise to pay, scout's honor, I'm going to give you $100,000, you know you can trust me, I work for the government. All they have to do, they don't have to produce a gold coin. They don't have to produce a silver coin, which requires real work, real effort, real responsibility to come up with gold or silver. All they have to do is say, I promise, I'm going to pay, no problem. And everybody's buying these promises. They're accepting these promises that the government and or Federal Reserve will pay. And they're using these promises in banks under fractional reserve banking to issue more credit to the public. If they get $1,000, $1,000 bond, and they put it in the vault under fractional reserve banking, they can lend, the private banks can lend $9,000 to the public. And if they were charging 5% on each one of those loans, collectively they'd be making 45% on the $1,000 bond that they'd deposit, that they'd put in their vault. It's, I think, part of the reason why we hear reports that banks don't want cash. They make, I don't think they can use the cash as collateral for loans under fractional reserve banking. I may be mistaken about that. I don't know one way or the other. But I think they can't use the cash as collateral for making fractional reserve loans. So they say, I don't want your cash. What am I going to do with that? Just hold, just store it in a hidey hole, put it in a box up in the shoebox in my closet? I don't want your cash. I want your debt instruments because I can put them in the vault, I can use them as collateral, and I can lend 9 times the face value to the public at 5% interest and make 45% off your bond. All right? Well, the point I'm trying to get to is that insofar as the banks and the government have been conditioned, people haven't quite figured it out yet. But in a debt-based monetary system, we value debt more highly than we value assets. And the logic of that system inevitably compels us to go deeper and deeper into debt. When we have presidents says, oh, we have to raise the debt ceiling, and the rest of them go along with them. And an ordinary person says, that's crazy. We can't go deeper into debt to stimulate the economy. It's just going to drive us faster and faster on the road paved with good intentions that are taking us to heck. Right? Why would we want to go deeper into debt? Because we have a debt-based monetary system. In our system, debt is wealth. Debt is wealth, and the more debt we create, the wealthier we theoretically become. And a lot of people say, that's crazy talk, but how did you get your car? How did you get your truck? How did you get your house? How is it that you're living in a house that's worth maybe $250,000? And for most people, the answer is they went into debt. It is by virtue of your ability and willingness to go into debt that you recovered, that you acquired the apparent wealth of the house you're living in and the car you're living in. How many of you paid cash for your car, paid cash for your home, paid cash for your land? Not many. Some did, but not many. Most of us have whatever symbols we surround ourselves with that say, oh, this guy's wealthy. How do you know? Well, he's got the nice house, got the great cars. How'd he get them? By going into debt. The symbol of that debt is the house. The symbol of the debt is the house, is the car. It's not assets. It's not a function of conventional assets. Not a function of conventional wealth. And when Jim is arguing that we used to be a productive nation, yeah, we were, when we had an asset-based monetary system. But now we have a debt-based monetary system. You don't have to work to produce debt. All you have to do is promise. I promise to pay. What was one of the triggers for the Great Recession that started in 2007, 2008? And the answer is subprime mortgages. People that they knew, this guy's never going to pay his mortgage. They gave him a mortgage anyway. All he had to do, oh, yeah, I promised to pay. That's all it took, was a promise to pay, and he got a house. All right? Couldn't keep it, but he did get a house. And the banks made money off the deal, and everybody thought that it would stimulate the economy. But my point is, all it took was a promise to pay. He didn't have to work, didn't have to have a job. He had to lie about it. He says, "Oh, I'm a rocket scientist, or I'm a neurosurgeon," when in fact he's sweeping floors. Didn't matter. Why? We don't care. All we want was the promise. The promise alone was good enough to get the house. Good enough, and more recently, it's good enough to get a car. They are allegedly using subprime lending to fund the purchase of automobiles in this country right now. When we went off the gold and silver standard, this, to my mind, is that elephant Jim is talking about. This is, for me, this is a fundamental element. Some people might see something more fundamental. It would be a spiritual basis. We walked away from God. We did a bunch of things. But in terms of economics, when we walked away from an asset-based money system and took on a debt-based monetary system, debt became our little god. And the more debt we produce, the richer we theoretically become. It's stupid. It's irrational. It's going to lead to tragedy. But for a while there, it was a hot ride. All you had to do was make a promise. Promise to pay. I don't need any money. I just need to be credible. People sit back and say, yeah, his promises are good. His credit is good. His promises are good. As long as people believed that, I could have anything I wanted. Even if I hadn't earned it. Right? Didn't have to show any assets, just a willingness to promise, which for many people is nothing more than a willingness to lie. And that's what the government's been doing. Their bonds are all promises to pay. Oh, we promise. They've got $18, $19 trillion in national debt that they admit to right now. Those are all promises to pay. That's what the debts are. They're not payments. They're promises to pay. There's no way in the world the promise is going to be kept, which means the majority of that $18, $19 trillion that we have in debt right now, sooner or later it's going to be repudiated. And where is that? Where are the bonds? They're in your pension funds. They're in some of your safety deposit boxes. You people and foreign investors are holding those bonds. You're holding those promises to pay at a time when the promises can't be kept. We've gone too far into debt. And they're doing everything they can to try to avoid facing that reality. But you have to come to the point. If debt is wealth, which is insane, but that's the fundamental idea, that's the fundamental principle behind a debt-based monetary system. If we're going to treat debt as wealth, we inevitably, once people get, hey, the more debt, the more promises I make, the more wealthier I become. And people say, yay, is this a cool system or what? I can get that yacht, I can get the corporate jet. All I got to do is walk into the bank and say, promise. No, it's not that simple. You have to maintain, so you have to pay back some of your debt in order to maintain your credit rating, your promissory rating. But still, it's the promises that get you what you want, the debt that gets you what you want. We want debt in a debt-based monetary system, and it's nuts, it's irrational, it's insane. It makes for a great time. We had a hot economy there for 30, 40 years. But we are coming to a point where we have created so much debt that we can't maintain confidence in the idea that the debt will be repaid. And once people realize, holy cow, all those promises can't be kept. All the debt can't be repaid. What does that mean? It means most of the bonds are worthless. It means most of those promises are worthless. It means those of you that are counting on those promises to pay rather than assets, you've fallen for the debt-based monetary system. Guess what? You're going to have a difficult time, just as James from West Virginia was talking about. It's going to blow up in our face. It has to blow up in our face because it's crazy, but it was fun. It was like doing crack, all right, or heroin or cocaine or something. It seemed cool for a while there, but inevitable. Or alcohol. Boy, we had a good time, you know, great party. But now the hangover's coming. Can't stand any more alcohol, can't stand any more crack, can't stand any more debt, time to get sober. And that's, I think, what we call a recession and or a depression. It's an opportunity for people to sober up, and it's not going to be fun. We're going to have to realize, oh my gosh, I'm not entitled to a nickel that I haven't earned. I'm not entitled to government entitlements and subsidies. All right? In fact, the only thing I'm entitled to is what that which I have earned in the free market by virtue of my work. And it's going to be a painful learning experience for a lot of people. And it's going to be painful even for people who know it. It's still going to be painful. The economy is going to suffer a great hit, and a lot of people are going to be inconvenienced and badly damaged or injured, and maybe even destroyed. We'll watch and see. But to my mind, it flows from the debt-based monetary system where we learn to value debt more than assets. It's insanity. If you're going to do that, you're headed for a bad end. We are going to break for some commercials. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. We'll be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
have a heart condition and emergency rooms and medical doctors are not an option, you need our emergency heart attack kit. 5 concentrated liquid formulas enter the system in 60 seconds to protect your heart muscle, strengthen heartbeat, increase circulation, relieve pain, and make breathing easier. When seconds count, you want all the help you can get with our emergency heart attack kit. Easy to use and portable in a 1-pound compact kit for your purse, briefcase, or car. Call Apothecary Herbs now for your emergency heart attack kit toll free. 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at www.thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it: to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. Got an article here from Yahoo Politics. And the headline is Clinton, Carson lead, Rubio and Cruz on the rise. Polls, all right? With a little more than a year until Election Day 2016, Hillary Clinton has established herself as the clear frontrunner in the race for the Democratic nomination, while the Republican side is still very much up for grabs. A new NBC News, Wall Street Journal national poll released Tuesday, that would be today, shows that Clinton has opened up a 31% lead over Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders. The former Secretary of State has 62% support among likely Democrat primary voters, compared with Sanders' 31%. Former Maryland Governor Martin O'Malley received just 3% support. The survey conducted October 25th through 29th, that was results of the survey. Again, the Democratic presidential race, Clinton 62%, Sanders 31%, O'Malley 3%. The same poll showed neurosurgeon Ben Carson now has a 6-point lead over Donald Trump in the race for the Republican nomination. Among likely Republican primary voters, Carson received 29% support, followed by Trump, 23%, Florida Senator Marco Rubio, 11%, Texas Senator Ted Cruz, 10%, and former Governor Jeb Bush, Florida Governor Jeb Bush, 8%. All right, so this is accurate to this degree. I agree that the Republican nomination is up for grabs. I suspect we will see, you know, who's going to be number one. It's going to vary from every few months, maybe even every month, who knows. We're going to see an increasingly tight competitive race. Trump is no longer number one. It is somewhat surprising that Ben Carson has a 6-point lead over Donald Trump and is leading the whole Republican. To me, this is surprising. It's certainly evidence that claims of racism in this country are difficult to support. I mean, we've had a black president for the last, going to, you know, six, seven years right now. And a lot of people are dissatisfied with what he's done. And you could suppose that a lot of people are sitting back and say, that's the last black man I'm ever going to vote for. And in fact, here we have the Republicans who, at least for the moment, are black men. Mr. Carson is leading the Republican Party primary polls by 6% over the next closest next closest challenger. It's real evidence. It's the sort of thing that's going to push a lot of blacks that are going to sit back and say, this is evidence that maybe the Republican Party is open to blacks. I mean, the Republican Party has been trying to make that point for a certain amount of time, but they haven't had much success. Blacks just vote Democrat. They don't matter what's going on. If Jesus is running as a Republican and Satan is running as a Democrat, most of the blacks are vote Democrat, 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 Democrat. But I'd say that Carson's candidacy, particularly on Carson's success to date, especially given after Obama being in there for 6-7 years, it's evidence that, there's the claims of racism are increasingly difficult to support in this country. That's one thing. But we'll watch. This is going to change. No one knows. You know, round and round it goes. Where it stops, nobody knows. But to me, what's more difficult or what's more surprising is that Hillary Clinton has a 31% lead over Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders. Now, it was just in the last 3 weeks or so, maybe a month, but Sanders was closing on Clinton, and in at least one poll, my understanding was that he was doing better than Clinton. And now he's 31 points behind. Does that sound reasonable to you, Melody? Do you think Sanders has really fallen off 31% and Hillary has gained? She's up to 62% after the problems with Benghazi and whatever else? Does that make sense to you, or do you wonder wonder about the validity of these polls?
Well, yes. I don't think these polls, I think they're interesting. I'm not quite sure they actually tell the truth. They are put together by, here we're looking at NBC News and the Wall Street Journal. That's their poll. I think it does give an indication to some degree that you do have, there's a lot of interest in the outsiders, which is Carson and Trump. I don't think there's a big difference between 29% and 23%. And I don't think it, so it's, I look at them, they're interesting, but I don't believe them.
I'd say the Republican 100%.
Let's wait and see.
I'd trust the Republican poll, but I am so surprised by the Democratic poll. Clinton 62%, Sanders 31%.
Right there, it shows you that it's not a true poll. They're both disgusting, So, that's their choice. People will vote for Clinton just because it's Hillary Clinton, which I don't understand. I have no idea why they would vote for her just because it's her. And you can ask people on the street, I'm going to vote for Hillary. Well, it's Hillary. Really? It just boggles the mind.
Yep. And I
so, yeah, they are. That's why I don't understand about Clinton, because you're right. You have Benghazi. You have the emails. You have all her other baggage. You have the Democrats as far as all the scandals that Obama has with the IRS and everything else. To see that a Democrat would actually get into the race, I find, or get it as the next president in office next term, I just can't see it happening. That's what I can't figure out about this whole deal. But yet, look at Trump. Do you think Trump could really beat Clinton in a debate? I don't. Do I believe Carson could beat Clinton in a debate? No, I don't.
That's a good point. I think Trump could give a run for the money. Carson, it's hard to say about Carson. Carson is soft-spoken in his own way. And he doesn't hammer people over the head the way Trump does and a lot of other politicians do. And Carson might just be able to, with an almost gentle style, he might impress people in a way that Hillary would find.
I don't think they would hear him. I don't think they would hear Carson, because she's a big mouth. And I don't think they would hear Carson. And I think to some degree he would give her a run for her money. Trump, I think everybody would flow to where they would feel so sorry for Clinton. It depends on how he handles himself. We're talking about something we're not even sure they're going to be, debating Clinton.
Yeah,
the only one that I see that could really, truly debate Clinton, and I don't like the guy, would be Chris Christie.
That's probably true.
He would give her a run for the money.
Yeah. Yes. And you know another
one? The only one.
Bobby Jindal.
No, he couldn't.
Oh, I think he can. Nope. That guy's knowledgeable.
Nope.
Coming out
he's
of the
knowledgeable, but he's not likable. I mean, he's just, no.
Well, he doesn't look American, per se, with his Indian
heritage. That has nothing to do with that.
It doesn't in some people's minds.
He doesn't have the strength that Chris Christie does. Chris Christie knows, hey, he can, he's a good litigator. He's a good, he would beat her.
I agree with that.
And he's the only one.
Jindal is a debater. Christie is a litigator, and there's a big difference. I mean, a debate is an interesting argument you can get into on an intellectual basis, but litigation is something where hammer and tong. A good litigator is a warrior.
And that doesn't mean I like him. That doesn't mean either, but he would beat Clinton, and he's the only one that I see would be able to do so. Cruz, maybe. But I think they would stumble.
It's still amazing to me that Clinton's got 60% of the Democrats, 62% are voting for Clinton after all of the problems that have been email, Benghazi, whatever, and everything mm-hmm. that she ever... You know, at one...
That's what I mean. She's
wonder,
so protected.
You know, it's one of those things where I look at it, and I don't know if she's just protected by a political system in the way I understand you to mean, or if there's something spiritual going on here. You know, is she the next judgment? We had Obama for a judgment on this country. Is she the next judgment that's going to be imposed on this country? I mean, how can people... I don't care whether she's a Democrat or Republican, per se. I don't see how anyone can look at her and say she is a moral individual.
Yeah.
And I wonder how this country can survive if we sit back and collectively say, we don't care if she's a crook, we don't care if she's immoral, she's whatever. She's like a gangster, but we like her. She's like Al Capone. People cheered for him at one point in time. We're going to cheer for Al Capone.
Yeah, but even Al Capone did good things. fed the hungry, you know, during the Depression, he fed the lions and so forth, you know, but he didn't hurt the, you know, no. But you know what's interesting? You brought up religion, and today a poll came out today, and Americans are becoming less religious. Of course, we all know that. The share of U.S. adults who say they believe in God, while still high compared with other advanced industrial countries, slipped to 89% in 2014 from 92% in 2007. The portion of Americans who say they are absolutely certain God exists fell even more to 63%. In 2014 from 71% in 2007. The trend is most pronounced among young adults, with only half of those born from 1990 to 1996 absolutely certain of their belief in God, compared to 71% of the silent generation, or those born from 1928 to 1945. So, you know, there is a falling away.
Yeah.
And I believe we're seeing the signs every day. You hear about, you know, we have the coach in Washington, you know, who's on leave, probably will get fired because he can no longer pray after a game. And, you know, he wasn't encouraging his players to join him. He'd go down on a knee and the players, you know, actively joined him. There's another young man I heard today. You know, he's getting in trouble because during the game, you know, he stops, he puts his hand to his heart and points up to the sky.
Yeah.
So, it's so disturbing to see no one is standing up for these people.
Yeah.
And
to see the government taking them down. The government is cooperating in this destruction. Right?
And yet, I'm reading that there's a school in California who's now allowing a transgender boy to shower with the girls.
Yep.
This is school, for heaven's sakes.
I know.
These kids don't know what they are. Who they are. When you take God out of their lives, they're even going to be more confused.
Yeah.
And allowing this to not guide them along the way, and just allowing them to make these decisions on their own, and parents going along with it without nurturing without, you know, trying to...
Rioting. They should picket those schools and make it abundantly clear that if you're going to pull this crap on our children, you're going to have a problem that's going to make you wish you were living in Missouri. I don't even remember the name of the town where we had our last riot.
But what's sad, Al, is when people do say any, all of a sudden, oh, well, you hate, you're a racist, you're this, all of a sudden you're tagged. The kids, the children, they don't want to talk about it. You know, they become friends with these kids. They're friends with them. And it's hard to, you know, acknowledge that, you know, there's something wrong with your friends. So it is really...
There's nothing wrong with being friends per se. All right? You can't just... Kids make friends with people they make friends with. And we can criticize... You shouldn't be friends with that kid or that person or that teacher or whatever.
Because I didn't say that.
Oh, I get that. All right. Go ahead.
You know, I didn't say... You know, I'm not criticizing that. I'm talking about the problem that you just can't... people are, I guess, afraid. I don't know, but...
It's a new culture. It's a new culture and a new system of values. And it's maybe the result of Hollywood. It's the result of television. It's the result of the internet. I don't know where you want to point the finger exactly, but it's a new system of values that is not conducive to a homogenous United States of America. And insofar as we're going to have multiple sets of values, we're going to see this country balkanized. We're going to see it tend to split up the way the former Soviet Union has. And we're going to see a kind of divide and conquer, and it's being done by protecting the values of people who are, to some degree, at least in some people's estimation, just freaks. And they can say, oh, we have our rights. Well, yeah, you do, but you don't have the right to destroy the culture that made this country powerful, great, and prosperous.
Younger people also are less likely to pray daily at 39% compared to the silent generation, which I gave those who were born between 1928 and 1948, at 67%.
Well, I'm part of the silent generation, Melody.
Really?
Yeah.
No, I find
that's
that
part. That's 1945. 1945, I qualify. Just over the line, Melody. Just over the line. Listen, we're out of time, folks. Melody and I will be back tomorrow. I want to thank all of you for listening. Hope you will tune in mañana. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank the producer. Bye-bye.
All night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? And still, there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad. In my dream, I have a plan. If I got me a wealthy man, I wouldn't have to work at all. Money, money.